And our special guest tonight, Graham Hancock, next hour, we'll open up the phone lines. We'll give you an opportunity to talk with Graham. We'll be back with more questions in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Graham, so you are a believer in the supernatural. You are a believer in ghosts, per se, right?
Yeah, I kind of don't want to use the word believer because it implies such credulity. I want to say that I've been working seriously on this problem for a number of years from a completely different angle to the angle that most people come at the supernatural from. I've been looking at it from the perspective of human consciousness. And what I think I've established is that an altered state of consciousness is and must be involved in all supernatural experiences. And these altered states of consciousness may come about by a variety of means. Surveys indicate that around 2% of every human population, 2% of the American population, 2% of the British population, for that matter, have a brain chemistry in such a state of flux that they are able to slip spontaneously into deep trance states, altered states of consciousness. And I think that the majority of people who have the UFO abduction experience are amongst that 2%.
Do you believe, though, that visitations, some of them could be physical, or do you think it's just
I think they increasingly have a physical element. I believe absolutely, and I set the evidence for this out at length in my book Supernatural, that we are dealing with interdimensional contact here, that this is the best possible explanation for it. But there has been evidence going back through human history that it may not simply be a matter of us being able to project our consciousness through into other realms and relate to the beings there, as shamans indeed still do to this day. There may also be breakthroughs from those other realms into this realm. There may even be technologies in those other realms. When I look at accounts of the fairy dance, as it used to be called in medieval Europe, where these groups of beings would whirl incredibly rapidly in a ring, and any human who came close to this dance circle would be drawn into it and propelled through into another world. And they might experience themselves as having been there just for a few hours, but when they come back, they find that days or even weeks or months or years have passed on Earth. I think that the latest version of that technology is the thing that we call the UFO, that it right. is also a vehicle for movement between dimensions. Now, we humans have not yet got to the stage where we have developed vehicles that can cross between the dimensions, but we have this amazing instrument inside our skulls called our brains. Which have been designed by millions of years of evolution to allow us contact to these other realms, because contact with those other realms is vital for our survival, vital for our understanding of ourselves, vital for our health. We have the ability to contact it. It's just in modern society we've shut that ability down, and we fear it, and we despise it, and we even demonize and criminalize it. Whereas in tribal and hunter-gatherer societies, that ability to shift one's consciousness into contact with other dimensions is highly prized and is the ability of shamans throughout the world. So I think we're dealing with an incredibly complicated problem here. It's no wonder that science has found it hard to come to grip with the supernatural and with the UFO phenomenon, because there is so little that is measurable and observable in the direct materialist terms that mainstream science is used to. But when we come down to the level of consciousness and realize that, that the brain, the traditional model is that these things called visions or hallucinations are actually made up in the brain. They're just sort of cooked up in the brain. They're generated by the brain. But we don't think that, for example, when we stand and look at a beautiful sunset or meet a fellow human being who is very striking to us in one way or another, we don't think that that experience is being generated by our brains. We naturally think that there is an outside reference point, whether it's the sunset or the beautiful person, which is giving us that experience. And the evidence I present is that the same is absolutely true of those experiences that we call visions and hallucinations, that there is indeed an outside reference point, but it is not of this world and thus cannot be measured with this world technology. We need to use the technology of consciousness that shamans have mastered in order to negotiate and deal with these other realms. In other words, we need to change our state of consciousness. We need to retune the receiver wavelength of the brain.
Why does DNA figure so prominently in your book, Supernatural?
Well, this is this again is an area of inquiry that I did not expect that I was going to get into when I began research on this subject. But I was presented with a mystery, which is all around the world. Going back, the earliest surviving evidence we have for this dates back 35,000 years to a little cave called Fumane Cave in Italy, in northern Italy, near Verona. And in that cave is encountered the first ever cave painting to have survived, the oldest cave painting that we so far know about. And what it shows is a supernatural being. It shows a creature that does not exist in this daily life. It shows a creature with horns and hooves, a part animal, part human combination. And that combination is exactly how many modern UFO abductees report that so-called aliens first appear to them. So we are dealing with a phenomenon that has been with us for tens of thousands of years. And exactly at the moment that our ancestors started painting these images of recognizable supernatural beings, that's exactly the moment that the whole suite of modern human behavior was switched on at once. Suddenly, overnight, we became very cunning hunters. We started to anticipate where the great herds of game would be. We started to track and plan their movements in ways that we'd never done before. We invented increasingly cunning and complicated tools. Our social organization stepped up. We began to weave textiles and fabrics. It literally was, as I said earlier, as though a light was switched on in the human brain all over the world. And exactly the moment it happens, we find the first ever recorded, documented evidence of our contact with supernatural beings. And I believe that the key, and there's a huge amount of academic evidence for this, which I report in Supernatural. This is the first time in my career as a researcher that I actually find myself agreeing with the mainstream academics, because the prevailing theory in anthropology now of the study of cave and rock art around the world is that indeed it was done by artists who had experienced altered states of consciousness, by shamans who perhaps had stumbled across plants which they initially thought were food items, perhaps psilocybin mushrooms, and they consumed them as food items, and then they found that that this opened a door in their consciousness, and they found themselves in contact with other beings and other worlds, and they documented those contacts on the cave walls. And exactly at the moment they did it, that's the moment that we became fully human. So this is a crucial moment in human history, and it wasn't just a moment, it has continued without cease down the ages, this transit to and fro with other dimensions, this transdimensional contact with beings who sometimes hurt us, but very often in a strange way seem to love us and to care about us and to want to bring out the best in us. And never before has such contact been so badly needed as it is today.
Has this been an evolution for you, Graham? Because I don't think you've always felt these views.
No, it has. It has been an evolution, and a crucial part of the evolution, first of all, has been a dispassionate study of the evidence, the evidence for what is involved with the supernatural, and secondly, the personal experiences that I have had. I traveled to the Amazon to work with traditional shamans there, drinking the powerful plant brew that they use in order to reach the other world. And that brew is called ayahuasca. It means the vine of souls. And in fact, it's made up of two different plants. One of them is a vine, one of these creepers that hangs down from the tall trees in the Amazon. And the other are the leaves of a bush. And the bush is known as chacruna in the Amazon. Its scientific name is Cicotria viridis. And this bush, its leaves contain an extremely powerful hallucinogen, which is illegal in the West. Although it is in fact produced naturally in minute quantities in our own brains, in the pineal glands of our own brains. And this substance is called DMT, dimethyltryptamine. Now, the interesting thing is that DMT cannot be absorbed orally. And yet in the Amazon, they drink it in a tea and it has these extraordinary effects. And the reason is because the other ingredient of the brew, the ayahuasca vine, contains a chemical that turns off the enzyme in our stomachs that normally destroys DMT on contact. It's an extraordinary achievement of science in the Amazon, if you like, that they discovered that these two plants had these properties only when mixed together. It can't simply be a matter of trial and error. And when you ask the shamans about it, they say the spirits of the plants told us what to do. They always tell us what to do. And the spirit of ayahuasca is frequently seen. I myself have seen her in this form, and so have many other sane and rational, grounded people from all around the world who have drunk ayahuasca. The spirit of ayahuasca very often appears in the form of an enormous serpent, or sometimes a seething mass of serpents. And she has lessons for us. Drinking ayahuasca has been described as joining a school. Professor Benny Shannon of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, who is the leading academic expert on ayahuasca, describes it on that way, that it was like entering a school that had a program of teaching for him. And that's exactly the way the shamans in the Amazon describe it, and that's exactly the way that I experienced it too, that there's some kind of teaching program going on here, and that it is external to us in some way. And this is, you asked earlier about DNA. Why does DNA figure so much in my work? I was looking for a solution to this mystery. Why do people from all over the world experience the same things in altered states of consciousness? The best explanation, I believe, is that we are dealing with freestanding parallel dimensions, which our consciousness is able to enter in these states. But another possibility that has to be looked at is that this information, this teaching program that is unleashed by these plants, may in some way be imprinted on our DNA, something that all human beings have in common. And if it were imprinted on our DNA, then that would explain why the same teachings are given to everybody. It doesn't matter if it's 35,000 years ago or today, a kind of interactive teaching program. And so I investigated that possibility as well. You know, we can understand why useful everyday abilities might be hardwired into our DNA. For example, so-called intuitive physics. If you were to throw if we were in the same room and you were to throw a rock at me, I could step out of the way, hopefully, and avoid that rock. Right. And in so doing, I would actually be bringing into bear hardwired knowledge. My brain would be doing tremendous mathematical calculations, trajectory, mass, speed, all kinds of trigonometry. I wouldn't even know it. I would just step out of the way. And we can understand why. Yeah, one can understand why evolution has given us this intuitive physics, as it's called. But why should evolution give every human being on the planet, once they enter an altered state of consciousness, a brain module for beings that appear to be half animal and half human, that teach very specific information to us? Information, by the way, that's been taught to scientists. Francis Crick, the Nobel Prize winner, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering the structure of DNA itself, admitted shortly before his death in 2004 that he had been under the influence of LSD when he first saw the double helix pattern. It was a teaching given to him in a vision. So the other possibility that we have to consider is that some intelligence may have written this information onto our DNA, perhaps written it on the first DNA that ever appeared on this planet, and it has been conserved and passed down ever since across billions of years of evolution until finally a creature evolved that was able to read that information, and that creature is us. And in order to read it, we need to be in altered states of consciousness. But to explain that parallel inquiry that I undertake in Supernatural, I need to tell you a little bit more about the amazing Nobel Prize winner Francis Crick and the extraordinary ideas he had about how and why life first started on this planet.
Well, he was a genius, obviously deserved his Nobel Prize, and did a lot of hard work. David Icke, by the way, you know David, wanted to entice me by going on a field trip with them, and he said, I'll get you some hiawatha. And I just said, you know, David, I'm not going to take this trip this time. Didn't want to do it.
Well, it's not so difficult. There are some, it's an extraordinary experience, and perhaps we should talk about it some more in the next sector. One thing I do want to make clear, and I think it's very important for everybody to understand, is that ayahuasca and these other shamanic plant hallucinogens are not addictive drugs. In fact, there is no addictive hallucinogen. On the contrary, ayahuasca and the Central African shamanic hallucinogen called ibogaine have both been used with astonishing success to get drug addicts off their addiction to hard drugs, cocaine and heroin addictions. Up to 50% of cocaine and heroin addicts who undergo a course of treatment with ayahuasca, which I think is properly thought of as a medicine rather than a drug, up to 50% abandon their addiction without withdrawal symptoms and never return to it. And healers are quietly working with these substances all over the Western world today, but our governments will not accept them because they consider them to be quote-unquote drugs like any other drugs. But their fantastic healing effect is very, very clear. Harvard Medical School has conducted a 15-year study with regular ayahuasca users in Brazil, where ayahuasca is legal and protected by laws of religious freedom. And there they have found only positive effects. They have not found any negative effects. People who were alcoholics before are no longer alcoholics as a result of drinking ayahuasca. People who used to beat their wives now have happy and calm family lives. They've become positive, contributing citizens, and across the board there's been a 6-point increase in IQ. So
that's
I think
incredible.
We have to think again about this substance. It's very hard work to drink it, and I'll tell you about this in the next segment. It makes you very ill, you vomit, you have diarrhea, but you have these extraordinary life-changing and healing encounters. I do know of examples personally of examples of people who've even been cured of cancers following the drinking of ayahuasca. So a whole new field of information has to come out about this substance.
Everybody gets sick though when they try it?
Almost everybody does suffer from vomiting and diarrhea. One of the names that it's known by in the Amazon is the purge. And this is very difficult for us in Western society to deal with, especially in a public setting. But I think it teaches us a very important lesson, which is to let go of our bodies and concentrate on this majestic thing that we have, which is called our minds, our consciousness.
At this point, it's illegal here in the United States, right?
Well, in Brazil, there are many groups in the cities who've developed what you would call syncretistic churches, which mix Christianity with the traditional consumption of ayahuasca or certain kinds of philosophical ideas. And one of these, the União de Vegetal, the UDV, has recently won a vitally important test case in New Mexico, which is federally relevant and which was settled in the Supreme Court. And they have established that their members are allowed to drink ayahuasca legally in the United States because it is a religious sacrament. It is part of a religion. In that sense, it's rather similar to the Native American church and the use of peyote. So the first steps have been taken to remove the sanction of legal repression and of social stigma, and to bring this amazing healing plant from the Amazon into the mainstream.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. This is a fascinating subject with our guest, Graham Hancock. We'll open up the Fast Blasts. We'll take some Fast Blast questions, and we'll also open up the phone lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. And our special guest tonight, Graham Hancock, we're going to open up the phone lines a little earlier just to take advantage of Graham being here and your ability to get to us, and then we'll take Fast Blast questions, too, on Coast to Coast AM. So, Graham, as you write, about 50,000 years ago, humankind couldn't do much. And then all of a sudden, there was this dramatic evolution, this incredible brain power that we possess today. What do you think happened?
Well, to cut a long story short and recap a little of what we've been over in the previous segments, I think our ancestors discovered altered states of consciousness. And I think they initially discovered these altered states through their encounters with certain plants that they perhaps sampled as food items, such as psilocybin mushrooms, which then completely changed their state of consciousness and put them into direct contact with what they experienced as supernatural beings, with teachings for them from another realm. And I think it was those teachings, and that's why my book, the main title is Supernatural, but the subtitle is Meetings with the Ancient Teachers of Mankind. I believe that these encounters with these very probably transdimensional beings, or alternatively with a mysterious teaching program recorded on our DNA, were what actually made us human. And the trick is, we have to be in altered states of consciousness to access these teachings. We cannot access them in the normal, alert, competitive, problem-solving state of mind that is so encouraged and praised in modern society today. That state of mind is very important, and it's part of our duty as human beings to be connected, really connected, to the material world. But we shouldn't lose sight of the spiritual part of ourselves, which may be the greater and the bigger part of ourselves, and which the historical record shows was fundamental in making us human. We shouldn't lose sight of that, and of the fact that our evolution has equipped us with a means to make contact with those realms in altered states of consciousness outside of the everyday life.
David writes us from Ontario, Canada, Thunder Bay, Ontario, in Canada. He said, do the shamans repeat any warnings for end times?
And yes.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Absolutely. I have spoken to so many shamans who feel that we are at a crossroads, that some great change, some tremendous change is coming, is looming up on our horizon. And let's not forget that the ancient Maya of Central America were fundamentally a shamanistic culture. They too made paintings of spirit beings inside caves. They too cultivated altered states of consciousness. In fact, the use of hallucinogenic plants was astonishingly widespread across Central America, and particularly cultivated by the Maya. And it's the Maya, in their amazing calendar, who come up with this specific warning of an end of the world, effectively. And when we translate their calendar into our calendar, as I think every listener to this show knows, we come up with the date of the 21st or the 23rd of December, 2012. Now, what is going on here is very complicated and very difficult. If you look back deep into human history and look at the ancient cultures, you find that they tell us that there have been cataclysms in the past, that great human civilizations have been washed away and destroyed, almost entirely forgotten from human memory, and that every time this has happened, human behavior has been implicated in the disaster, that the things we do, we human beings do, bring down this disaster on ourselves. And that's what the shamans were telling me in the Amazon. Look at the dreadful things that are happening in the Amazon. The Amazon is the lungs of the world. If we allow the Amazon to be destroyed, then we are going to face a cataclysm. And the Amazon
and it's happening, Graham.
And
they
it's
are.
Happening. It's yeah. happening in front of our eyes for incredibly short-sighted and stupid reasons. There is terrible poverty in Peru and Brazil. That poverty leads people to settle new lands, to slash down the forest, to create farms. Migrant laborers are being employed by huge international enterprises on soybean farms. Can you imagine they're cutting down the old growth forest of the Amazon and replacing it with soybean farms, the soybeans to feed cattle to give us hamburgers? And after 10 years, those farms are useless because the soil only supports rainforest. It was never intended to grow soybeans. What an incredible mistake we are making. If the root cause of this problem is poverty, poverty, then let us solve that problem. The entire problem of the Amazon could be solved with just 6 months spending in Iraq. We could have the Amazon secure forever with just 6 months spending in Iraq. All that's really needed is to pay the people of the Amazon to look after it, to protect this precious treasure for the world. But instead, because of short-sighted, ignorant, greedy thinking, we are allowing this incredible resource to be destroyed. We are literally burning the lifeboat in which we all live. It's madness, absolute madness.
Kaylin from Garden Grove, California writes, have you, Mr. Graham, encountered any reports of ET telepathic contact during any kind of events?
Not only have I encountered such reports, but I've had such experiences directly myself under the influence of ayahuasca. It is very commonly reported by shamans that they meet beings in their altered states of consciousness who are in flying saucers and who look very much like the Western conception of an ET. And it was very mysterious for me on one of my ayahuasca sessions in Peru, one in particular, although it happened to me on several occasions, that I found myself in this deeply altered state of consciousness confronting a being that seemed exactly like the conventional idea of an ET. And, you know, one could argue that I had just picked that idea up from the culture, that somehow it had infiltrated my mind and that's why I saw it. But the evidence is quite the contrary, because, as I mentioned earlier, the active ingredient of ayahuasca is DMT, dimethyltryptamine. And experiments were conducted in the early 1950s. Before any UFO or alien abduction had been reported, people were given a DMT and asked to comment on their experiences. And a great many of them reported being taken up into the sky, into metal objects, by small beings who did painful experiments on them. Exactly the same experience that would later be reported as the UFO abduction experience. Now, I resist the idea that these are straightforward extraterrestrials. In other words, that they can simply be explained as physical beings like us, but from other planets revolving around other stars elsewhere in the universe. I don't think that that's the explanation for what's going on. I think it's much more mysterious than that, and I think it has to do with transdimensional contact and the interpenetration of dimensions and the impact that intelligent beings in different dimensions can have upon us. And I do feel, and I present evidence for this, that there has been 35,000 years of contact with these other dimensions, and that it has played a fundamental part in making human beings what we are today. And that if we want to get to grips with this mystery, and really want to get to grips with the ET mystery, as it's called today, and with all paranormal and supernatural occurrences, we have to deal with consciousness. We have to understand that consciousness is the medium through which we contact these things, and that human consciousness is infinitely variable, and that the receiver wavelength of the brain can be retuned, as shamans do in their daily lives using plant hallucinogens, and that this is the way for a systematic inquiry into the mystery, rather than all of us just running around like headless chickens looking for some kind of instrument that's going to measure this. We have the instrument already. It's our brains. We just need to use it in the right way.
All right, to the phones we go, east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with Graham Hancock. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Jerry from Baltimore, Maryland.
Hello, Jerry. Thanks.
Hi, Jerry.
Also, hi. Also, 20 years, by the way, in St. Louis, your hometown. I listen every night, and I hear these people talking about, well, most of the time when they're sleeping in bed and they see people, and it dawned upon me, I got narcolepsy. And a lot of the symptoms that they talk about, I have, but mine is due to narcolepsy. Now, I thought they might have narcolepsy and don't know it.
Yes, narcolepsy is another form of altered state of consciousness. It is retuning the receiver wavelength of your brain and allowing in experiences that are normally kept out by our brains.
Of course, in narcolepsy, the people just seem to fall asleep sitting at desks, no matter where. They just fade off into the sunset.
And therefore lose their connection with this daily physical life, but may gain a connection with other realms of existence in that state.
Call from Wichita wants to know, fast blast, if you build up a resistance to ayahuasca so you don't have those horrible symptoms you just mentioned.
Yes. Shamans who drink ayahuasca twice a week gradually master the vomiting and the diarrhea. I've now drunk ayahuasca 16 times, and I found on the last five sessions, which took place in Brazil this year, and in fact just a couple of months ago, that I was much less nauseous than I had been before. So gradually we master these symptoms. The first few sessions are often very difficult. But I have to say that the purging is not entirely unpleasant. One does have a feeling of tremendous cleanness. It's as though you've rid your body of terrible toxins that have built up over the year. And there's a tremendous sense of relief and clarity afterwards. And always the next day after an ayahuasca session, the session typically lasts for 2 to 3 hours, always the next day, you feel very clear and very much connected to the world and very, very much alive. And I'm so confident about the medicinal and the positive values of ayahuasca that I actually took two of my children, they're adults, one is 22 and the other is 25, with me to Brazil to drink ayahuasca in a ceremonial setting. And we had an extraordinary experience of contact as a family, and they had amazing encounters with the ayahuasca spirit and came back transformed from this experience and very thoroughly grounded and connected to this world, but with a sense of the importance and significance of the worlds that lie beyond and that we normally cut ourselves off from.
Can you predict things telepathically? Can you get into people's minds when you're on this substance?
Yes, this has not happened to me, but many shamans report this. In fact, shamans will sometimes go on joint expeditions into the supernatural realm, into the other realm. They will meet each other on the other side, as well as traveling into other dimensions. They have the ability, they report the ability, to travel out of body in this world. And there's a very intriguing account from an anthropologist who was working with an Indian tribe deep in the Amazon. They drink ayahuasca twice a week. He was drinking with them. And the next day, their shaman came and reported to him, "We're very sorry to tell you, but the father of your wife died."
Oh my.
"In New York last night." And 5 days later, the anthropologist received the information from New York that exactly at the moment that they said, indeed, the father of his wife had in fact died. So they had seen this in vision. They had been able to remote view to travel to different places. And this is why I say again and again, if we want to investigate the paranormal, if we want to investigate the supernatural, we don't need to rely on cute little instruments like so-called ghost meters. We need to rely on the vast experience and knowledge of shamans in hunter-gatherer cultures around the world who do this every day and who absolutely understand these realms and these beings.
Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You are on the air with us. Hello there. Good morning.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Yeah, I was wondering if we can tap into other dimensions. Couldn't they tap into ours? We wouldn't know what... they could be messing with us and screwing things up as bad as our things are going on our planet. They could have... You know, they obviously have powers, they're way ahead of us.
Very good question. And this is exactly why the discipline of shamanism is so important, because what shamans are saying is we do not need to be victims of these transdimensional intelligences. We do not need to be at their mercy. We can enter their realm. We can deal with them on our own terms. I have no doubt that spiritual beings and entities are involved in much of the mischief that takes place in the world. But if we're going to deal with that mischief, then we have to deal with them. And the only way to do that, the way that human beings have developed over tens of thousands of years, is this amazing ancient system called shamanism, which is so derided and despised by modern scientists who really know nothing whatsoever about what we're talking about. In other words, these realms are all around us all the time. They're interconnected with our lives, whether we like it or not. We better know about them. we better deal with them rather than turning our backs on them.
When you take the ayahuasca, how long does it take to kick in?
Kicks in after about 45 minutes. You're dealing with a small amount of liquid. It's very dark, dark in color, red or dark black, very tarry, very concentrated. Equivalent to perhaps a double shot of whiskey in size. The moment it hits your lips, you know that you're dealing with something serious. The taste is absolutely ghastly. It is, without a doubt, the worst taste on this planet. You shudder as it goes down. Then you're okay for a little while. After about 45 minutes, you're starting to feel the nausea. You're starting to feel these ominous stomach rumblings. And at the same time, these amazing visions are beginning to present themselves before your eyes. Best seen with your eyes closed rather than eyes opened. I suppose one of the reassuring things about ayahuasca is that you can often stop the visions and come back to this world by opening your eyes. And then you're in the ayahuasca state. The vomiting is normally over within an hour and a half. You're in the ayahuasca state for the next 2.5 to 3 hours. Some people need to take a booster, take a second shot of ayahuasca to keep their level of consciousness at the right tuning. That depends on individual brain chemistry. The experience can be extended, but most people find that 2 to 3 hours of this exploration of another world, because that's what it is. It's a richly detailed world, a jungle world full of intelligent beings. 2 to 3 hours of this is enough in one night. And overwhelms you, and you need to come back and ground in this world again.
Grandma, how long have you been studying this portion of what we're talking about tonight?
Well, my first encounter with ayahuasca goes back to 2003.
Not too long ago,
and I came to it very reluctantly because I too had been affected by what I now clearly recognize, at least where hallucinogens is concerned, by the propaganda of the war on drugs, and I was very, very afraid. But at the same time, as a professional writer, as somebody with a commitment to bring honest and directly experienced information to my readers, I felt that if I'm going to be talking about the role of altered states of consciousness in human evolution, then I must experience those altered states myself. Many, many scholars who work in this field refuse to do so, but I felt I had to do so, and in 2003, I finally forced myself to do so, and my program of inquiry involved ayahuasca. It involved ibogaine from the Amazon. It involved psilocybin mushrooms. It involved pure DMT, dimethyltryptamine, all of these plant-based shamanic hallucinogens. I did work with them, and they completely changed my view of reality.
One more hour to go with our guest, Graham Hancock. Phone lines ready. We'll be back.